Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it's October 11th. We're going to have a lecture on muscles today. This is the last lecture on muscles, and we're going to cover pelvic girdle and lower limb. And then next time we're going to go over nervous system, fundamentals of nervous system. So it'd really be worthwhile for you to do your pre-lecture reading assignment for nervous system next time. That will help you a lot. Because I got a feeling that the nervous system is maybe the toughest part of the class, just because you're not used to looking at people's brains and things like that. It just doesn't really sink in as well as maybe muscles and bones and stuff like that. I don't think it's as extensive maybe as muscles and bones, but it's just different, and you're not used to looking at brains, so it's a good idea to read over that chapter. All right, so starting Wednesday, we have our third practicum for those of you that have lab on Wednesday, which then means a week from today, the Monday group will get their practicum. And the other thing that we're concerned about is exam 3, which is in 2 weeks on Monday. So it's not next week Monday, but it's the week after, the 25th of October. Okay. And on that test, we're going to cover chapters 10, 11, and 12. That's skeletal muscle tissue, muscles of the body, and that first chapter on nervous tissue. All right, so that's what's going to be on the next test. So in Blackboard, I think I have all your grades inputted, and it's calculating your grade correctly, including some extra credit. So if you look on Blackboard, everything should be good to go. And what else can I say about Blackboard? I don't know. I think everything's working okay, sort of. All right, online quizzes always makes me a little nervous because it bails out on students sometimes in the middle of the quiz. So when you're taking a quiz, turn everything off that you know that's on, running on your computer, like instant messengers and Skype and whatever other programs where somebody can reach you via the internet. Just try to turn all that stuff off because it probably interferes with your quiz taking online. All right, there's probably something else I wanted to mention, but I can't quite remember what it is. So here's the sign-in sheet. Please sign that. Okay, so all your quizzes and tests. Oh, I know what it was. There were a couple people I noticed in the 7:30 class that didn't show me an ID, and I didn't put their first lecture test grades in. So I did that today. So if you're missing a grade from test 1 or test 2, just remind me and I'll put it in there so that you have an accurate depiction of your grade in class. Okay? And of course, for the next lecture test, you got to bring your Cypress College or Fullerton College picture ID. All right, so we're going to look at a number of different websites today. And probably, I don't know if you've looked at many of these websites yet, but what's your favorite website for looking at muscles? All right. Oh, the one that I just had up over here? Which was this? This one is from Maricopa County Community College. And it's got some muscle man figures right here, and it's got some good arm figures. It just doesn't have the pictures of legs very well. Right? It's just the small pictures, right, from the mini muscle man. Those are good, but let's see. Dr. Sanchez has some pictures as well on his website. So if you look up under gallery of pictures, and here's muscles. We've got muscles of the head, muscles of the trunk, muscles of the arm. None of these we're going to do today, but for instance, here are some really decent pictures, right, of the arm. They're not labeled. Right, which means that you can't just go in there and memorize. You really need to look these things up and from your book and then copy over the names of these muscles. But I think that will help you on the practicum because these are the exact specimens that will be on the practicum. Right, these are the muscles that we have. All right, so like for here, we got a nice deltoid. Right, and then biceps, and then triceps over here. In between the biceps and triceps is going to be the brachialis. Right, so here is triceps, and then we got some muscles that go across the shoulder, like the teres major, right, and then teres minor, and then the infraspinatus. So it'd be really handy if you can just kind of work your way around all these different muscles. All right, and in terms of the forearm, which is a little bit more complicated, let's look at the look at this one right here. So this is the anterior forearm, right? Anterior, and this is the posterior forearm. Just always go to anatomic position. Here's a nice coracobrachialis, right? Coracobrachialis. So here's biceps, brachialis, and then triceps once again. Well, I want to get to the forearm, but I'm enticed by some of these other muscles down here. So here is the subscapularis, right? And then this one down here is the teres. Ooh, what is that? Probably teres major. Right, teres major, and then this one that's kind of cut, you see that cut right there? That's the insertion for the latissimus dorsi. I don't think I would ask you latissimus dorsi from this one, but if you're wondering what that one is. All right, so let's go to the muscles of the forearm, and where do I always like to start? What's a really good landmark? Yeah, look for this, I see a nice V right here, and right here forms a V. This little dinky muscle is the pronator teres, and then we got the brachial radialis right here. And then continuing around to the rest of the anterior muscles, starting laterally, we've got these are all going to be what kind of muscles? You know, this is probably the most important thing that I could impart to you is what are all of these muscles here? What's the action of all these muscles? Yeah, they're going to be flexors, either of the wrist or of the digits. Right, so here's the flexor carpi radialis because there's a nice thumb, right? And then here is the palmaris longus, and deep to the palmaris longus is the flexor digitorum on either side, right? And then lastly, this right here is the flexor carpi. You see it going to the wrist ulnaris because that lines up with the little finger, right? So in anatomy, just pick a nice landmark that you know and then know the relationship of these structures and just kind of work your way around. So here we got brachial radialis, so these are all going to be extensors, right? So extensor carpi, radialis, extensor digitorum, and then extensor carpi ulnaris over here. So that's pretty much it for the forearm. So this is a good muscle you can play around with at your leisure. I don't think we have any good legs anywhere, except for, here's another website you might want to mess around in. I don't think I want to do too much on this particular website, but it has even a lot of muscles just for labeling that we're not even interested in this class, like the plantaris muscle, right? Some of these we are, right? So you can play around with this one if you wish. But the one that I find most useful is Get Body Smart, because you can look at origin and insertion, you can turn labels off, you can practice labeling in your mind, and you can even look at the action of various muscles. Okay, so we're looking at pelvic girdle and then lower appendage. I suppose it's good to start with something that works across the hip, right? And the hip is kind of interesting because you can flex, you can extend, right? You can abduct and you can adduct. And because it's a ball and socket joint, you can do this. What's this kind of motion? That is, well, rotation would be, okay, rotation would be if you're standing in anatomic position and your toes are facing forward anteriorly, of course, rotation would just be like this. That would be a lateral rotation, medial rotation at the hip. All right, but what I was thinking of was, oh, this one here. What's that? The windmill motion, that's circumduction. That's a combination of all those basic motions that we were looking at. So go to Get Body Smart, and we want to look at something across the hip. How about anterior thigh? So, before we go there, anterior thigh muscles. Do we have anything that looks like a hip right here? Let me just go see if that's the one we want to... Yeah, that's the one we want to look at. All right, anterior thigh muscles that work in your anterior pelvic region right here. What are all these going to do? Okay, I like flex. All right, so flex. And some of those other motions, some of the muscles do participate in rotations and things like that, but this is pretty much flexion, all right, across the hip. Now, what about the trunk muscles that flex? What's a trunk muscle that flexes the vertebral column? Like what I'm showing you right now. Okay, like the rectus abdominis, right, that's a flexor. So if I ask for the antagonistic muscle to the rectus abdominis, what would you say? Or how would you start thinking about that? Flip over to the opposite body compartment, which is the posterior trunk, and indeed, somebody said, yeah, erector spinae, right? So once you get that down, it will make really, really good sense. Okay, so we're talking about this anterior hip muscles, all right? These are going to flex. What about the antagonistic motion? To hip flexion is hip extension. Where would you start to think about muscles for hip extension? Where are they going to be? Posterior, yep. And that would be, for instance, like the gluteus maximus. All right, well, let's look at some of these muscles in the anterior thigh. All right, so let's pick what? Maybe psoas major. All right, the psoas major. And this is a really nice program right here, because what can you do with this program and not get all messy and bloody and full of formaldehyde and stuff like that? You can do a virtual dissection with this program, right? You can move some of these muscles out of the way. Maybe I can even make it a little bit bigger. Control plus, make it a little bit bigger. All right, and so we have a bunch of muscles right here, and of course we should be able to name all of these muscles. So let's turn all these labels off. And we have the psoas major from the lumbar bodies all the way down to the lesser trochanter on the femur. So it's going across the hip. And when it contracts, remember, muscles can only pull, they can't push. That's going to cause flexion. Which one did I say? Psoas major, all right? And so if we say flexion, look what our little friendly guy should do right here. And indeed, that's flexion where? Across the hip. Don't pay attention to the knee joint right there. All right, and you can see that there are some other motions that it produces, but the prime motion is flexion across the hip. And on a practicum, for instance, you only need to write one down. You don't have to write the whole litany of motions that it undergoes. And on the lecture test, I would just pick what the most common and major motion, the prime motion that a muscle produces. All right, so if we want to do a little dissection, we want to name some of these muscles right here. So the psoas major, okay, here's the iliacus. And then how about anterior thigh muscles, like the quadriceps that I see right here? The quadriceps has four muscles, and we can see three out of the four. So the rectus femoris, vastus lateralis, vastus medialis, and the intermedius is deep to the rectus femoris, so we can't see it on this diagram, but maybe if we dissect some of these things away, it shows up. All right, and then here is, so all of these are going to be extensors of the knee or extensors of the leg, right? You can talk about it in either way. Then laterally, when these contract, right, these are going to be abductors. We don't need to have a lot of strength when we abduct our thigh. There's only one little dinky muscle right here. That's the tensor fascia latae. And then all of these are adductors. And these have to be strong because these keep your legs underneath your body so that you don't fall down between your legs. Right? That would be terrible if that were to happen. All right, so what do we got right here? We got gracilis. And then we got adductor longus. Okay. Ooh, and what is this one here? Yeah, it's probably pectineus. I don't see the magnus labeled. All right, do I see adductor magnus anywhere? No, it's not labeled, but it's going to be deep to the longus pectineus. And look, right next to the pectineus is that the iliopsoas muscle. All right, so we've got iliopsoas, pectineus, and then adductor longus. All right, so let's maybe turn some of these labels off. What were we really interested in looking at? We wanted to see the psoas muscle. Oh, look what we got right here. Does that say? Oh, vastus lateralis. Oh, we don't get the intermedius any. Oh, here, intermedius. It popped in, right, underneath the rectus femoris. So here is the intermedius of the quadriceps, removing some of these other muscles. And notice in lab, we don't make you know all the names, like this adductor brevis right here. That's one you're not really concerned about. All right, so here's the psoas major. And if you want to see the origin insertion, just click origin insertion, right? So here you can see the origins on the vertebral bodies of the lumbar vertebrae, and the insertion goes all the way posterior to the lesser trochanter. So when this muscle contracts, it raises the femur, but it also can rotate, right, laterally. Since its insertion is posterior, it's the posterior part of the femur, it's going to pull the posterior part medially, which means that this anterior part is going to rotate laterally, so that's what produces the lateral rotation. Okay, so if you want to see that motion, just like that. Okay, flexing the hip. All right, and to some degree it can flex the vertebral column. So that's a muscle that people work out when they do stomach crunches, when they really want to work on their abdominal muscles. and you can kind of get carried away. So what's a good way to isolate an exercise to your abdominal muscles if those are the ones you want to strengthen? Don't lift your hips off the ground, right? Just flex the vertebral column and keep your hips on the ground. Don't sit all the way up and like put your chin on your kneecap right here. Because what that's doing is what? Just exercising the iliopsoas muscle. All right, so this is really handy. So you don't have to have that skeleton that's in lab that has the origin and insertion painted on. Right, here's a nice virtual model that you have. Okay, one that is synergistic is the iliacus. All right, so it's the iliac fossa is the origin. The insertion is the same insertion. It's the lesser trochanter. And so it's going to have the same motion, flexing at the hip. All right, so for fun, let's go to some antagonistic muscles. And again, where would you be thinking then all of a sudden? Posterior. All right, so let's go to posterior thigh, and in particular gluteus maximus right here. Getting all these muscles out of the way. Okay, here's gluteus maximus. Right, and the origin is superior, the insertion is inferior, as it is for appendicular muscles. That's so for trunk muscles or axial skeleton muscles. All right, so it's the surface of the posterior ilium right here, and even the posterior inferior surface of the sacrum. And the insertion is down on the femur, namely the gluteal tuberosity. And the gluteal tuberosity is just an extension of the linea aspera, which I think was on your last practicum. So linea aspera continues all the way up through here, but I didn't ask you to know this for the lab practicum, but this is the gluteal tuberosity. Maybe I should have asked you that. All right, but it's really part of what? The linea aspera on the femur. All right, so when that contracts, maybe you can see that since it's on the posterior side of the femur, not only does it extend the hip, but it's going to pull this posterior part of the femur medially, right? And the anterior part is going to move laterally, so that produces what? A lateral rotation as well. And it can also abduct. So let's watch the, so there's extension of the gluteus maximus. Here is a lateral rotation, right, because it's going to pull this posterior part toward midline. And it can also help elevate the legs, right, and that's what we would call abduction. All right, gluteus maximus right there. All right, so that's pretty good for muscles that work on the posterior thigh. Okay, there's a couple down over here that do, which we're going to get to in just a second. Gluteus medius, we do want you to know that for the practicum. All right, so here's a gluteus medius. It's deep to the gluteus maximus. And again, it's the outer surface of the posterior ilium, but it inserts into what? The greater trochanter right here. So this is more of an abductor than an extensor, right? Because it's just going to pull the greater trochanter medially, which abducts the thigh. So that's good for that particular muscle. Okay, let's go back to anterior muscles. Anterior thigh. Actually, I want to go somewhere else. All right, the quadriceps in particular. All right, so some of these quadriceps, some of these muscles, all right, well, what muscles make up the quadriceps? I can't just isolate them. But we got the rectus femoris, the vastus lateralis, vastus medialis, and deep to the rectus femoris is the intermedius. All right, and they all have a common insertion into this tendon of the quadriceps, which attaches to the patella, and then there's a ligament from the patella to the tibial tuberosity right here, right? So that's the patellar ligament. Remember, a bone-to-bone connection is a ligament, muscle-to-bone is a tendon. And all of these, since they pull onto the tibial tuberosity, that is what? Extension of the knee or extension of the leg, right? So that's extension. That's what the quadriceps does. But one of that group, the origin is this anterior inferior iliac spine, This one right here, the rectus femoris works across the hip as well. All right, so not only does it extend the knee, but it can also flex at the hip as a result of that. And we don't have that motion programmed in right here. All right, so flexes thigh or flexes at the hip, all right, because it works across the hip. But that's the only muscle of the quadriceps that does that. All the rest just work across the knee. All right, so if the quadriceps right here extend the knee and flex the hip, where would you look for muscles that are going to flex the knee and extend at the hip? Opposite, you're going to look at the posterior. Exactly right. So let's go look at the posterior. Posterior thigh, is that right here? This looks really good. Okay. So there are three muscles in the posterior thigh that we call hamstring muscles. That doesn't sound like an anatomic name, but people talk about them all the time like that. All right, and the three are the biceps femoris, the semimembranosus, and the semitendinosus. And where I like to start is the semimembranosus for the following reason. Okay, let's stop this. Let's get rid of some of those adductors. All right, so the origin is the tibial tuberosity, which is on what? The ascoxae. So this muscle goes across the hip, and where does it insert? Into this medial condyle of the tibia. It also goes across the knee. All right, so this muscle has a couple actions too. It will extend, right, the thigh or extend the hip, but it will also flex at the knee as a result of that. All right, and the reason why I like to start with this one of the hamstring group is because it's a big muscle, it's a little bit deep, but there are a lot of M's in semimembranosus. And what kind of muscle is it? Is it medial or is it lateral? It's medial, so that's why it's easy for me to start there. Even if I haven't looked at a mannequin or a muscle leg in a long time or given a lecture in 10 or 15 years, I could still remember that, right, because of all those M's. Okay, so it extends, right, extends at the hip, right, but it also flexes the leg. Right, so it pulls your heel back up to your gluteus region right here. All right, now what are some other muscles that do that? Those adductors we're not so concerned about right now. All right, I want to look at a muscle that's right on top of the semimembranosus. So here's semimembranosus. Sometimes we can even see it medially a little bit over in this region. And right on top of it, superficial to the semimembranosus, is a muscle that has this big long tendon. And it has the same origin, it has the same insertion, and this is the semitendinosus. So that's easy to see in lab because of this really long tendon right here. So it extends the thigh and flexes the leg as well, right? Just like the semimembranosus. And that's two of the three muscles. What's the third muscle of the hamstring group? It's the biceps femoris, and that's laterally. It has the same origin, but now the insertion is the lateral condyle, posterior medial condyle of tibia. Ah, that's wrong. Look at that. Okay? Or what muscle am I on? Oh, I'm on semimembranosus. Okay, let's go to the biceps. Oh, I jumped ahead of myself. Okay, let's go back. We want the biceps. Okay? So biceps is this right here. Go back up one level. All right, so the ischial tuberosity. All right, and then here is the lateral condyle of the tibia and the head of the fibula. All right, so again, because it works across the hip, it extends at the hip, but it flexes the knee, has both of those actions. So there's extension. All right, so those are anterior thigh, posterior thigh, and how they produce antagonistic motion. Okay, the only other muscle that I think we're interested in right now, let's see if we have something. Oh, we didn't talk about the sartorius. Okay, that's kind of a standalone muscle. That's interesting because the sartorius is the longest muscle in the body. All right, so it originates at that anterior superior iliac spine, and it inserts into the medial condyle of the tibia, right? So it's going to flex across the hip, and it can spread your legs apart, so that's an abductor, but it can also laterally rotate. Right? It can laterally rotate. And when you sit cross-legged on the ground with your legs crossed, this is the muscle that's holding your knee up off the ground. All right, that prevents you from disarticulating your hip. And people used to sit in that position all the time years and years and years ago if they were seamstresses, if they were sewing clothing. Okay, so they'd be sewing by hand and moving the fabric with their knees back and forth. And so people that were working with hides and clothing, for instance, that way, had hypertrophied sartorius muscles, big, strong sartorius muscles, because they were using that one all the time. So sometimes it's called the Taylor's muscle as a result. All right, but I think it's more interesting today because it's the longest muscle in the body. Okay, so let's talk about abductors and adductors. Then across the hip. What did I click on? Adductor longus. Good enough. All right, so adductors, of course, remember, muscles can only pull, they can't push. All right, so the superior aspect of the pubis right here, and the insertion is just this medial middle part of the femur, and of course that's going to adduct. All right, and it can weakly flex as well because it's working across the hip. Okay, what other muscles do we have right here? Adductor brevis, we're not so concerned about. That's not on your list, but here is magnus. So here is adductor magnus. It has the same motion. All right, the origin is a little bit different. It's the inferior ramus of the pubis instead of the body of the pubis for the longus. So this is a little bit deeper muscle. And another really good muscle that's an adductor is the gracilis. Right, and gracilis is this most medial muscle. It goes across the hip as well as the knee, and it is a strong adductor. Okay. All right, so adductors are going to be medial. What about abductors of the hip? They're going to be lateral, and there's only one, and that is the tensor fascia latae, which is over in this region right here. So let's see if we can find it. Is it on our list anywhere? Oh, yeah, right here. Okay, so here's the tensor fascia latae. Notice how short it is. It has a very extended tendon, right, that goes down to the lateral condyle of the tibia. All right, so this right here is kind of like an aponeurosis. It's a broad, flat tendinous sheath, and it has a name. It's called the iliotibial band or the iliotibial tract. All right, and so that is an important adductor of the hip, and it's not a very strong muscle because it doesn't take a lot for that motion to happen. All right, so make sure you understand the common theme that antagonistic muscles you will find on what? Opposite sides of the body. Okay. What else do we want to look at? Let's see if they have any muscles going across down to the foot. Okay, sartorius we looked at already, fastus we looked at that, we looked at all of these. Okay, I don't see gastrocnemius. Oh, here, gastrocnemius. All right, so let's look at some muscles that work across the ankle. Gastrocnemius, all right, also works across the knee, but mostly at the ankle. And remember, what bone makes up the heel that you step on all the time? It's a tarsal, but of course that one is called the calcaneus. So there is a big, strong tendon that inserts into the calcaneus, and there are two muscles that commonly insert into that tendon. So sometimes we call that the calcaneal tendon, or you could call it the Achilles tendon from Greek mythology. And that's the gastrocnemius, which is superficial, and then the one that's deep to the gastrocnemius, where I have the pointer right now, that's the soleus. All right. And when these muscles contract, it elevates this posterior part of the calcaneus. It elevates it, which means that the anterior part, the one that's in front of your ankle, is depressed. What do we call that when your toes depress into the ground? That's plantar flexion. So these are big, strong muscles for plantar flexion, right? The gastrocnemius and soleus. And I probably couldn't tell you which one is the prime mover. Maybe the soleus you might consider the prime mover, because the gastrocnemius actually goes across the knee as well. All right, so let's look at the gastrocnemius, getting rid of all these different muscles. Okay, so the origin, right, is the medial condyle of the femur and the lateral condyle, because there are two origins, just kind of like the biceps muscle. And the insertion is the calcaneal tendon, so that flexes, right, at the knee. When this contracts, that will flex the leg. All right, so it's going to lift your heel up off the ground because it's working across the knee. But the other thing that it's going to do is what? Plantar flex. Oh, notice they don't. Maybe they have that in the foot, since we're looking at muscles that act on the leg. Once we get to gastrocnemius in the foot, you'll see that a plantar flexes the foot. All right, so that's gastrocnemius. What about soleus? Is that on here? No, because it doesn't work at the knee. All right, it just works across the foot. All right, so we're done with that. What about, let's look at some foot muscles. Oh, looks complicated. Gastrocnemius. Not bad. Okay, so we got rid of some of those muscles. So the action at the ankle is what? Plantar flexion. Nice. All right, now where would you look for muscles that, what's the antagonistic motion to plantar flexion? Dorsiflexion. And where are you going to find muscles that do that? Anterior leg. So let's just see, do they have anything programmed in here that does that? Oh, yes, they do. All right, so now we're looking at the opposite body compartment. We're looking at the tibialis anterior. All right, so it's the lateral condyle of the tibia, and it inserts into tarsal. And remember, muscles can only pull, and this will lift your toes up off the ground. That's what we call dorsiflexion. Okay, which is antagonistic to both the gastrocnemius and the soleus. All right, which then kind of leaves us with muscles that will flex or extend the digits of the foot. Okay, so all the extensors are going to be in the anterior compartment. All the flexors are going to be in the posterior compartment. So extensor digitorum longus, hallucis longus. Maybe digitorum would be easiest to see first. Let's put a couple of them together. I'd like to see the tibialis anterior. Oh, all these. Oh, look at all those. You don't have to know. Okay, tibialis anterior. Lateral to that is going to be the extensor digitorum longus. And if you follow this down underneath the retinaculum right here, retinaculum is sort of like an aponeurosis. It's a broad, flat tendinous sheath, but it's circular around the ankle and around the wrists, right? So this one right here, you can see the tendons going to the digits, and then underneath it right here is the extensor hallucis longus. Is it labeled on here? Okay, and the hallucis muscle goes to the big toe, and apophysis is one in the forearm that goes to the thumb. But I didn't ask you to know any of the apophysis muscles. Right, but you should probably at least know that the hallucis is a big toe and pollicis is the thumb. All right, so let's go to the extensor digitorum. All right, and that's just going to extend toes 2 through 5. Right, and it can then weakly dorsiflex, right, the foot as well. All right, what about extensor hallucis longus? That goes to what digit in particular? Big toe. So here, that's the deepest muscle. When you're looking for these, this is actually kind of hard to see with the models that we have upstairs. So here's the extensor hallucis longus, and you can see the insertion going to the great toe. All right, so that extends toe number one. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what you do with that. You're thinking when that happens. Okay, so if these are all extensors, where would we find flexors? Posterior compartment. Okay, like for instance, tibialis posterior is going to be a little bit deep. How about flexor hallucis longus? Let's start with this one right here. Okay, so laterally we got the flexor digitorum and then the flexor hallucis longus. This is kind of funny. Look, it's lateral, but where is your big toe? Where's your great toe? It's medial. All right, so on the models, I suppose this can be a little bit confusing because this tendon crosses over. Right, it goes medial to the calcaneus right here. So don't mix up and think that this first medial muscle is the hallucis longus. Okay, it's not. It's the digitorum because of the way this tendon crosses over. All right, and then about in this area here is going to be the posterior tibialis. Let's see if it shows up. Oh, yeah, right here. Or if you want to say tibialis posterior, that's fine with me. Okay, so these are the three muscles that you have to know for lab. The flexor digitorum, the flexor hallucis longus, and then the deepest that you only get a little peek of in the models that we have upstairs is the tibialis posterior. And all of these, right, are going to either plantar flex or flex the digits. Right, so plantar flexion or flexing the digits like that. And they haven't isolated the hallucis from the digitorum muscle, right, because they would just be either one versus these four digits over here. Okay, so this is a particularly good site for looking at actions, origins, and insertions, right? And does this work in your iPad? Nice. Okay, so this works even in the iPad. That's really nice. Okay, and so that's all the muscles I think that I need to go over for today. Oh, there's one more, fibularis. Okay, fibularis is going to be lateral right here. All right, but it's mostly in the posterior compartment of the leg. So if it's in the posterior compartment, it's going to be synergistic to the gastrocnemius and soleus that we have. All right, so that's going to be a plantar flexor. Okay, plantar flexor, and I don't make a big deal out of inversion and inversion on the test. You might have to know what that action is, but you don't have to know the muscles that produce those motions. Okay, unless you have a history of spraining your ankle, right, and stretching out these different retinacula and tendons that move across the ankle, then of course that would be a really good muscle to exercise, because how do you rehabilitate a joint and tendons and ligaments that work in a joint? By working the supporting muscles that work across that joint. Because these muscles, with exercise, you can shorten up, which will then take the slack out of these tendons right here that have been stretched out by accident. Okay. All right, so that's probably just a good common theme. So that's it for muscles. Those are all the muscles that we're interested in. Okay, so the rest is kind of up to you to become familiar with this. But probably the thing never to forget is to know muscles by body compartment. And if you're interested in finding a synergistic muscle, what should you think of in terms of body compartments? Same body compartment. If you're looking for an antagonistic muscle, opposite body compartment. And then you just got to become familiar with some of the names of muscles. For instance, what is going to be antagonistic to the triceps? Is it going to be the biceps femoris? You would want to say no, because where's the biceps femoris at? It's in the leg, right? It has nothing to do with the triceps, which is in the brachium, posterior brachium. All right, so it's going to be what? The biceps brachii. So make sure you read all the questions really carefully. Online questions and questions during the test. Okay, so that means that we get to move on to nervous system. Introduction to nervous system, which is good timing because that's some of the more difficult parts for a lot of students. So how do I find things like that? Alright, so I'll minimize this, minimize that. Okay, so now don't leave lecture. 10, where do I have it? Let's view this as a list. Ah, here. Okay, because the opening remarks for the nervous system you'll find very helpful, because it will show you how to organize the nervous system. All right, so I want to put that away. And I want to look at this. I want to go up, up. Wow, a lot of complicated diagrams right here. I don't think I want to show you a bunch of those diagrams just yet. All right, so general organization and some functions of the nervous system. And let me make this a little bit bigger. Okay, that's a little bit helpful. All right, some basic divisions of the nervous system. Oh, there is a pretty good slide that shows that. Okay. But, you know, before we get there, I want to talk about B first, right here. The basic structural divisions of the nervous system. And then we'll look at how they communicate with each other. So if we have the nervous system, what kind of tissue makes the nervous system? Yeah, nervous tissue. And you can break nervous tissue down into how many different general kinds of cell types? You've got neurons, which conduct electrical information very fast over long distances in your body. And then you have support cells that we call neuroglia. They don't transmit electrical impulses, but they do a number of other things in the body that we're going to talk about. Okay. So if we're going to break the whole nervous system down by where it is located and not by the histology, there are two major parts of the nervous system. There's something called central nervous system that is made out of your brain and spinal cord. And remember, that's part, those two things are found in what, the dorsal cavity, right? The cranial cavity and vertebral cavity, right? And then everything else outside the brain and spinal cord is what we call the peripheral nervous system. All right, so central, anytime somebody uses that term central, immediately you should be thinking of brain and spinal cord. Like if there's a reflex that happens centrally, it means it happens in this brain or the spinal cord. Or if there's a receptor for oxygen or a receptor for acid, there are central receptors that are going to be located in the brain, right? But you might also have peripheral receptors in other parts of your body. Right, that could measure things like, for instance, blood pressure. That's going to be outside the brain and spinal cord. Okay, so let's take a look at then this first division up over here. The nervous system, right, is the master control and communication center in the body because it can make decisions very quickly and send information out to various divisions just to keep your body healthy. We call that homeostasis. So in terms of function, right, there can be different kinds of nerves. Nerves that take information from the periphery to the central nervous system. Right, so nerves that start in the periphery, like your fingertips, right, or eyes, or nose, and that's going to carry information to your brain. Right, we call that sensory input. Those kinds of neurons we call afferent. I'll be using that term all the time. Afferent is what? Sensory. And which direction are nerve impulses traveling if they're an afferent neuron? From the periphery into the central nervous system. That's a sensory pathway, right? Periphery to central nervous system. As opposed to motor signals. After your brain makes a decision on what to do, like you see a bus coming at you, okay, your brain makes a decision to get out of the way, it's got to send information out to glands, and cardiac muscle, what would happen to your heart if you see that happening? That's going to speed up, right? It's going to make sure that you have plenty of blood pressure, blood is moving to everywhere in your body. So the brain is going to send impulses to the heart to speed up. It's also going to send impulses to skeletal muscle to get out of the way of that bus. And so that's what we call motor output. Motor output originates in the central nervous system and then exits and goes to the peripheral nervous system. That's where your heart is and your skeletal muscles, for instance. Right? And the term for those kinds of neurons are what we call efferent. Efferent and motor are the same. Afferent and sensory are the same kinds of neurons. Right? And I'm mispronouncing that just a little bit so that you can see how it's spelled unequivocally. It should be pronounced afferent and efferent. But if I use those terms, if I'm speaking not so clearly or very fast, right, it's easy to not hear what I'm saying. So I kind of say afferent and efferent just so that you can hear what I'm saying. All right, there's a third kind of neuron. And that's what we call an association neuron or interneuron. These kinds of neurons are found only in the central nervous system. They stay completely within the central nervous system, while the afferent neurons are found partly in the peripheral, partly in the central nervous system. The efferent neurons are partly in the central nervous system and partly in the peripheral because they go from one to the other. But these association neurons or interneurons are found only in the central nervous system, one or the other. All right, so here we have pretty much a good picture that shows that. So here we have what central or peripheral nervous system, where I have the cursor kind of getting at central nervous system, brain and spinal cord, and the periphery we see out over here going to your limbs or to your head. So the kind of neuron that takes information from sensory organs to the central nervous system, we call those afferent. Very good. Afferent. Make that mark. It's not on this slide, but make a mark in your notes. All right, and then the brain figures out what to do, right? Like maybe you're thirsty, so it sends a motor signal out the motor neuron to this biceps right here. And so this right here we call a motor neuron or an efferent, right? So here's an afferent pathway, here's the afferent and then efferent pathway. And look at this neuron right here, right? So this thing that looks kind of reddish to me, does that look red to you? That red? What color is this thing down here?
Red.
This is red. This is blue. Okay. And this one here is? Red as well? Gray. Oh, it doesn't have a color. Okay. Gray. So you see this gray thing right here. That means that that is a neuron. This blue thing is a neuron, and this red thing is a neuron. Look at this blue thing right here. You see it partially in the peripheral nervous system, and part of it is in the central nervous system. This red thing right here, partly in the peripheral nervous system, part in the central nervous system. But this gray thing right here, or the association neuron, is where? Completely within the central nervous system. Right? Doesn't exit or leave. But it integrates information and it makes decisions for you. Okay, so that's just kind of the general scheme. So here we see what? Brain and spinal cord, central nervous system, everything else in probably a yellow, right? That's peripheral nervous system. And what is central nervous? It looks green. No. No, what color is that? Brown. Oh, you guys don't know either. Okay, well, whatever color that is what? Central nervous, brain and spinal cord. Okay, so you can see the structural organization. All right, that's not such a useful scheme. All right, so let's go back to the lecture notes because this is what I think you will find helpful. All right, so we got nervous system divisions. Let's break it down. The two main divisions of the nervous system are peripheral and central. All right, and the central nervous system can be broken down into the brain and spinal cord. All right, peripheral nervous system is everything else. All right, so the peripheral nervous system then can be broken down into two divisions itself. It can either be afferent, which means what? Bringing signals from periphery to the central nervous system, right? Sensory organs to CNS. And when I say CNS, that just means central nervous system. Or efferent, which is what? CNS out to the periphery. All right, so those are two divisions of the peripheral nervous system. The motor division right here can be broken down into two divisions as well. Right, and they are somatic and autonomic. Autonomic means that this nervous system just automatically controls things without your conscious thought. Like what things in your body are controlled via nerves that you don't have to think about? Like your heart rate. That's right. So the autonomic nervous system controls your heart rate, controls digestion, all right, and controls maybe your pupil diameter, right? When it's bright out, your iris constricts. And when it's dim, like in here, your pupil is big because the iris dilates. That's all taken care of via the autonomic nervous system. You couldn't make your pupil smaller or bigger no matter how hard you tried, okay? Because that's done by the autonomic nervous system, as opposed to things that you can control voluntarily. We call that the somatic nervous system. Somatic and voluntary pretty much are the same thing. Somatic sort of means your body, on the surface of your body. And there are skeletal muscles that are not in body cavities, right? And so we call that part of your somatic body, right? So there are somatic nerves that go there because those nerves can control skeletal muscle. All right, what are some things that the autonomic nervous system, there are actually three things that the autonomic nervous system controls for you automatically. All right, we call them viscera. They're smooth muscle, there's cardiac muscle, and glands. So if you want to jot down cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands, that would be really good. That's what the autonomic nervous system controls. And what does the somatic nervous system control? Skeletal muscle, right? That's under your voluntary control. So here is kind of a scary part of the class. You don't have much control over your body, right? What do you have control over? Skeletal muscle. What about everything else in your body? Cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands. Automatically controlled, right? Which is a good thing because you'd be really preoccupied if you had to worry about your heart rate right now and contraction of smooth muscle all over your body and glands. All right, but that's kind of interesting. The only thing you have control over is skeletal muscle via the somatic nervous system. Okay. Furthermore, this autonomic nervous system, oh, I tell you what division in the peripheral nervous system are we talking about, sensory or motor? Motor, right, which is efferent, right? So control over these various organs. The autonomic nervous system can be broken down into two divisions as well. Okay. And let me go back to somatic for a second. In terms of controlling your body, what's a really important kind of process or architecture that should be employed if you're going to have precise control and balance over some system in your body? Like the musculoskeletal system. What gives you precise control and balance of your musculoskeletal system? Like I know Friday night you got pulled over. Right? And that person with the blue uniform and the badge, sidearm, said, put your finger on the tip of your nose like that with your eyes closed. And of course you could do it. What allows you to do that, that precise control and balance? Yeah, some muscles, but what's the relationship of muscles that you use to do that? You used what? Antagonistic muscles, right? Like the biceps and triceps working exactly right so that you didn't poke the officer in the eye or yourself in the eye by doing that, right? So antagonism is really important. The somatic nervous system only has one division. It doesn't have an antagonistic division because it has what? Antagonistic muscles, right, underlying that nervous system. So it does have precise and control and balance because you have antagonistic muscles. Now the autonomic nervous system, right, is a little bit different. Because how many hearts do you have? You only have one heart. So you don't have a heart that can speed up and a heart that can slow down, right, to mix antagonistic control. So, since you only have one heart, the autonomic nervous system has, look at that, one, two divisions. One division will speed it up, while the other division does what? Slows it down. That's antagonism, which is perfect for precise control and balance over your heart. So, the autonomic nervous system has two divisions. One is the sympathetic nervous system, and the other is the parasympathetic nervous system. In terms of the heart, parasympathetic slows it down, and the sympathetic speeds it up. The only thing for sure that you will automatically know for 90% of cases is that these two divisions of the autonomic nervous system will always be antagonistic to each other. Sometimes the sympathetic will be excitatory, right? Which means then that the parasympathetic will be inhibitory. But sometimes the sympathetic nervous system is inhibitory. You can't just say that sympathetic is always excitatory. But for instance, if the sympathetic is inhibitory, what could you say about the parasympathetic nervous system? Right, if sympathetic is inhibitory, what about parasympathetic? It is going to be excitatory. They're always going to be opposite each other. And you'll see when we get to autonomic nervous system why one, like the sympathetic, why that is excitatory sometimes and inhibitory to other kinds of systems in the body. Oh, I see where I had. So where does the autonomic nervous system go to? Goes to viscera, which would be what? Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and it shouldn't be glands. That should be what? Glands. Should be the same loudness as these other words right here. I don't know why it got shrunk. Okay, so when you look at nervous system, always try to figure out where you're studying. Where are you applying your time? Are you CNS or PNS? Are you in a sensory division, right, or a motor division, or somatic or autonomic, right? And then the nervous system will start to make some sense. Your textbook has sort of a diagram like that, but not quite. All right, so information processing. We kind of talked about this already. Afferent takes input from receptors to the central nervous system. Association neurons then can weigh a whole bunch of information together, right, and makes a decision on what to do. So for instance, right now, if we heard a fire alarm, okay, that auditory information is going to go into our brain, and we might just say, oh, you know, it's probably somebody in high school came by and pulled the fire alarm, and we don't have to run out of the building. All right, but what happens if you hear the fire alarm and you smell smoke? What's the decision going to be? Probably different, right? You're going to run out of the building, take all your belongings carefully. All right, so association neurons make that decision based on a whole bunch of information, right? Not just one kind of modality of information. And then the central nervous system sends all of that information to skeletal muscle, all right, and to visceral muscle, like your heart, all right? And what nervous system is going to send information to your heart? Say if that fire alarm went off. We got somatic versus autonomic, right? Autonomic would go there. Okay. Well, let's look at the basic unit of integration and transmitting information, and that is a neuron. All right, so we got a pretty good picture of a neuron right here. This is a really nice exam figure. So here is a neuron. It's not like any other kind of cell that we've looked at so far in class because it has all of these little funny projections coming off of it. And these projections, you know, on a bone, what do we call a projection on a bone? A process, right? A bump on a bone, and they could be very narrow, like a styloid process. Well, these are processes as well, right? These short ones that are highly branched, these are what we call dendrites. And then there is, sometimes on some kinds of neurons, there is one process that is singular and it's very long. And this process here could be maybe a meter long, can be extremely long. Well, these dendrites up over here are microscopic. They're just on the order of maybe 10 microns or so, right? So these dendrites are really short, this axon is really long, and we can't even draw this cell to scale because if we drew this axon as long as it would be, right, then you couldn't even see the dendrites or the center part of a neuron that we call the soma or the cell body. So again, soma means body. And here is the cell body that contains the nucleus, and you can see a little nucleus in there, and some mitochondria and endoplasmic reticulum for making things that this neuron needs. We'll look and see at all the things that this neuron needs. All right, so you got dendrite, you got dendrites, cell body, and axon. And down over here, here you see an arrow with a direction of an impulse. So the job of this guy right here is to receive information and to pass it along, right? Electrical information. And electrical information always goes from dendrite to cell body and then down an axon down to this terminal end of an axon that sometimes we call an axon terminus or axon terminals. And you can see some terminal branches right here. All right, so nerves don't pass electrical information from an axon to a cell body and then out a dendrite. This is really just a nice one-way street. All right, so here we got dendrites, cell body, axon. This part of the axon right here, it kind of looks like a funnel. This part of the neuron, which is the beginning part of the axon, takes information from all of these dendrites and the cell body, and it adds it all up together. What do we call that mathematical process where we add information up or add numbers together? We call that integration, right? So this part right here is really important because the axon hillock integrates information from all over the body and then makes a decision on what to do, and it might make a decision to send an electrical impulse down this axon. So this initial part, this first part of an axon, is called the axon hillock, and you can see it kind of looks like a funnel. Information is funneling into this part of the neuron. Okay. Now, on this axon right here, the neuron right here is this yellow color, right? Or gold? What would you like to call that? Yellow. Okay, this yellow part is the neuron, but it's surrounded, at least around the axon right here, with other cells, and they kind of look like blue or gray or something right here. All right, so the yellow part is the neuron, but these cells right here are support cells. They're called neuroglia cells, and in particular, these are Schwann cells. And the Schwann cell improves the speed of conduction down the axon. Could make it 100 times faster compared to if it wasn't there. So an electrical impulse actually kind of hops from one end of this Schwann cell to another, right? And it just hops down the axon very, very quickly. All right, so think of an electrical impulse at the top of the stairs. Right there, and you want to get down, if it wanted to get down the stairs down over here very fast, what would be the fastest way of doing it? Step on every stair or jump down maybe every second or third stair? What would be faster? Yeah, if you were to skip some stairs, right, it would be a lot faster. The same thing for an electrical impulse. If the electrical impulse has to travel through every little bit of this axon, it would be slow, but since it can skip, that means that it's a lot faster as a result of that. So there's a chemical compound that the Schwann cell synthesizes that's called myelin. Myelin is a lipid, and it acts like an insulator on wire. And so sometimes we call this sheath that surrounds this axon as a myelin sheath, and that speeds the rate of conduction down an axon right here. Okay. There is a gap between the Schwann cells, right? And we call that a node of Ranvier. That's where the electrical signals hop into from one node to the next. And the very outer part of a Schwann cell is what we call the neurilemma. So maybe I can show you, all right, a neurilemma somewhere. Where's a neurilemma at? Maybe I don't have a picture of a neurilemma. Here's a pretty good idea. All right, so here is an axon, and here's that Schwann cell, and you can see it wrapping itself around this axon, and it wraps itself around and wraps and wraps and wraps. Here you can see a lot of layers of wrapping in these thin layers right here that are very close to the axon. These are the deepest layers of the Schwann cell. These contain myelin, the insulation. But now this is a living cell. What does a cell have to have if it's living? It's got to have DNA, and it's going to be inside of a nucleus. Right? I don't know if I see a nucleus anywhere. Oh yeah, here's the nucleus. But what else does it have to have? A virus has DNA, but we don't consider it alive because it doesn't have cytoplasm. Okay, so the Schwann cell has to have cytoplasm and a nucleus, the genetic material. And we find that in the outermost layer of the Schwann cell. See it right here? That's the neurilemma. That's the living part of the cell. The myelin sheath almost has no metabolism in it, but it contains that insulating material called myelin. So the neurilemma is the outermost layer of a Schwann cell, which contains the cytoplasm and the nucleus. All right? And this other part right here is not neurilemma. That's just the myelin sheath. All right, so what's the job of this Schwann cell? What does it do? What does it do for us? Or this neuron? It speeds up the rate of an electrical impulse down an axon. That's exactly right. Okay. So let's see, lecture notes. Okay. So information is transmitted via neuron from dendrite to cell body down an axon. And what can you tell me about these arrows right here? One way. They just go one way, right? Okay, the next thing that we want to look at, we can just barely cover this. I want you to be able to tell three different kinds of neurons from each other and what their function is. All right, so let's see where these different kinds of neurons are. You mean we don't have them? You guys got gypped? Oh, well, I definitely want you to know the three kinds of neurons. Let me go get them from another place. Oh, I didn't load in the old textbook. I only have version 6. All right, I got to find that for Wednesday. Okay, so make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Where's that sign-in sheet at? Up here, okay. So we're going to look at different kinds of neurons and different kinds of neuroglia next time is where we're going to start.